Good afternoon. Oh, come on, you guys. Got to have some more excitement than this, don't you? Tuesday afternoon, away from the office. Lovely Minnesota. But no, it's great. It's great to be here, and I'm proud to kind of kick this off for the 3M team. And what I'm going to talk about is, you know, last year we laid out a game plan for you. There's not going to be new news here. This is all about delivering what we told you. So we'll put some more meat on it. And at times, I'm going to try to simplify how we run the business for you. A lot of you kind of continue to ask us, well, can you help simplify, you know, how you think about the business and how you run it, how you plan it. So I will try to use some very simple charts for you to help describe those as we go through this. So if you go back to last year's meeting, some of you weren't there, but we had a number of questions, both that we wanted to answer as well as I know a number of you had. And that is, can we accelerate growth of the company? Are current margins really sustainable? How will our more aggressive growth plans impact ROIC? And how will we deploy the balance sheet? And then, of course, plans to really drive higher earnings in PE. So let me just kind of give us a score chart as to where we're at here. This is what we've delivered since last May. Looking at 06 and 07, you can see that on the top line, our growth has been 8.7 in 06. In the first half of 07, it's 10.9. So from that standpoint, we've really had good top line performance. There's obviously a couple points of currency in there, but even if you back out those, we've accelerated our growth rate. If you look at our operating income margin, we went from 22.7. In 05, we're currently running 23.4 for the first half of the year. We did 22.2 last year. So we've been able to maintain our margins as well as our ROIC. And EPS has been growing at the double-digit rate, which we promised you. So we've been able to get, we've been able to hold the margins, accelerate the top-line growth, and be able to hold the investment returns as well. So at least from a 18-month perspective, we're right on plan. So we have a solid starting point. Now, of course, this performance did not just start 18 months ago. This chart takes you back to 2001 as the base point, looking at local currency growth, operating income and margins, EPS and ROIC. And what you can see here is continuous accelerated performance. If you look at the local currency growth, 6.6% CAGR, and then that's at an accelerating rate, which is, of course, what we want for the model. Operating income is growing at a 15% rate. You can see EPS at 18% and ROIC at 6.3 points. And then you can see our first half performance for 2007. So this is a longer-term story, not just the last 18 months. And we are maintaining premium returns and accelerating our sustainable local currency growth, which is what the story we've been telling people for the last five years. Now, importantly, all businesses are contributing to our improvement. This just replots the total company here on a local currency basis as well as operating margins. Now, the story has changed over the last 6 years, though. If you look at the makeup of the contribution, and I just split this between display and graphics, which has our optical film business in it, and our other segments. If you look at the growth rate in the early 2000s, you can see that really it was D&G that was driving the growth rate of the company. But more importantly, in the last 3 years, you can see a much more balanced approach to the growth rate of the business. Now, of course, that was all part of the strategy. We couldn't count on D&G to be the only growth story in the company. And if you look at margins, this is the company, this is D&G's margins, and this is the rest of the business. So we've been focusing on continuing to grow the profitability of every business. And then D&G, of course, has had exceptional margins, have tailed off some degree, but still well above the company average. So the story here is all businesses are continuing to accelerate top-line growth, other than D&G in this particular case, and, of course, the margins have also significantly improved. So our portfolio really is a huge asset for us. Now, I'm going to use this simple model to help describe what we've got going on from a long-term strategy standpoint. Again, our long-term strategy is long-term shareholder value creation. However, the story does change over time, as I'll point out in this chart. I've simply broken this chart into two elements, productivity and growth. I'm going to spend the bulk of my time talking about productivity. George, in his presentation, is going to talk about growth. Now, the reality is there's a lot of overlapping between the two. And the reality is productivity, at the end of the day, fuels and is the funding for the growth mechanism. So we got to keep the productivity going. But importantly, if you look at what we're doing in 2001 to 2005, as we're driving margins from 15.8 to 22.7, we were really focused more on productivity as the growth rate of the company and some of the underlying growth factors weren't able to actually give us the kind of growth rate that we needed. So our focus really was on productivity and to start to drive enabling capabilities in both productivity and growth. An important thing to understand is our efforts are all about organizational capability. We're building organizational capability around productivity and growth that are sustainable. These are not one-off efforts. So let's look at the results, 01 through 05. Here's kind of the summary factors down here. We took revenue from 15.4 to 20.4, income almost doubled with margins 15.8 to 22.7, and returns 15.3 to 21.9. You can see that what the focus was back in 01 through 05. We're heavily focused on productivity programs, restructuring some of our assets, our organizations. We also were putting in place productivity programs that are still alive and well today. Indirect cost management, global sourcing programs, Six Sigma, overhead leverage, and healthcare and containment were all major focuses of our programs back in 01 through 05. At the same time, we were trying to invest in some major growth initiatives for the company to build long-term capability. Selling the big 3M, upgrading our marketing capability, building our brand across the world, end market organization structure. We reorganized a couple of years ago to get more at an end market structure. Our service, international portfolio planning. We've got our international subsidiaries more involved in the planning of their businesses, as well as working on price leakage. But these don't happen overnight. So again, our focus was driving productivity. And George will tell you that in a few cases, we probably took productivity a little bit too far, okay, and too long, in the case of the labs as an example. But that's one of the things that kind of happens when you drive the productivity side of this. But importantly, we now think we're at the margin level that growing our margins is not part of our long-term plan. What our long-term plan is holding margins at the 22 to 23% range, getting about 2x IPI, and this model will generate long-term double-digit EPS growth for the business. So it'll be a different game plan going forward. This is what I call our financial planning model. I try to boil this down to one simple slide, and it's not as simple as this, but in the sake of simplicity, I try to boil this down for you. But importantly, there's a couple of foundations here. We want to deliver sustainable long-term shareholder returns. We think the core of that, of course, is double-digit EPS growth. So that's our model. At the foundation of that is really our sales growth. If we can get 2x IPI, that will continue to fuel this double-digit EPS. We need to leverage our growth at about a 30 to 40% leverage ratio, which we've been able to do on a historical basis. So that will continue to drive EPS. On a going-forward basis, though, we now have some options in these other elements of the plan. Productivity. Our efforts historically have been to offset inflation and pricing, and then primarily was to take it to EPS growth, but not to the degree that the growth is enough to give us double-digit EPS. We can turn around and reinvest excess dollars back into even more growth into the business. Now, periodically, we'll have other potential gains like foreign exchange gains, a improvement possibly in our pension returns, or things like asset sales, that we now have the flexibility of either putting it back into more growth and keeping this engine going, or if we need to, we can put it into more EPS growth. Share repurchase program, we've been a little more aggressive the last couple years, and I'll cover that later in my presentation. But at a minimum, our plan right now would be to offset dilution. And then I'll talk much later about a tax rate improvement that we have We have a tax rate that is the kind of the premier tax rate kind of in the group. And in this context, the bad context, okay, of being best in class. We have the highest tax rate. We have some plans to get at that. That as well as when that starts to take hold, we can put that back into more growth or into a EPS expansion. So this is a simplified model as to how we think about the day-to-day running of the business, setting up the strategy of the company, that the foundation really is around getting growth, driving productivity. Hopefully those are enough to drive our double-digit EPS growth. Gives us the ability to reinvest excess margin back into additional growth. A lot of people ask, well, are you sure you can get more growth? Historically, you haven't shown you can do that. Well, part of it is that we've been using a lot of these to just drive more margin in the business. And now we're to the point where we think our margins are more than satisfactory. As a matter of fact, we're industry leading by almost any measure. And now the challenge is really to drive back into more growth. So where do we take this? First of all, it's important to understand that what we've been doing is, again, these are organizational capabilities we've been investing in. These continue on through time. And I guess I should have pointed out that these lines are more directional in nature than they are absolute calculations. But the important concept is drove heavy productivity. That does not go away. But the important thing is that the growth rate of the company continues to accelerate. So let me talk a little bit more about productivity. One of the elements on the productivity side that we've benefited from is a leverage of our G&A structure or our overhead structure. This is a chart that I've shown in prior meetings that shows that we have a simple strategy here. The simple goal is hold our overhead costs flat, and as revenue grows, effectively, you'll get margin expansion. From 01 through 05, that was worth about 2.5 points. We think there's another point and a half that we can see between 05 and 08 with the same strategy. So importantly, you got 4 points of margin enhancement without really impacting the business side of our operations. So these are really about controlling the overhead cost structure of the company while business expands. And that's the best way to obviously get margin growth rather than taking money from the businesses. So the important thing here is drive out costs or keep costs flat, localize our administrative costs where we can, reinvest in growth and keep this model going. So next step, what do we do going forward? We've added Lean Six Sigma to our toolbox. So what I'm going to do is, as one of our guest speakers today, is John Houle is going to come up and talk to you about Lean Six Sigma. John is our staff vice president in charge of supply chain and manufacturing and Lean Six Sigma. So we thought it would be best that he gets up here and explains the foundation and principles around Lean and gives us some great examples. So, John, and I'll be back up.
Thanks, Pat. Well, good afternoon. I'm going to briefly cover three examples from the thousands of projects we're running currently in Lean Six Sigma. And the idea is to show how we're leveraging Lean Six Sigma to improve our operational results. So what is Lean Six Sigma? It's really the combination of two complementary improvement methodologies. Lean tells us to focus on processes that improve value for our customers and eliminate those that don't. While Six Sigma tells us once you identify those value-added processes, reduce the variability and get them in control. We're continuing to evolve our process improvement tool set and making sure it's aligned to our business needs. We're building on a strong Six Sigma foundation and have a very well-trained workforce. Currently have 49,000 projects in process or completed, with currently 9,000 currently active. We have over 700 Lean Six Sigma resources, and we've engaged with our customers on over 760 projects. Lean Six Sigma has contributed more than $4.5 billion since 2001. The first example I'd like to talk about comes from our 3M Perth tape manufacturing plant in Ontario, Canada. One of the products we manufacture in Perth is our filament tapes. In this example, the plant identified the need to improve their planning and scheduling systems and use the lean concept of visual tools, visual controls, in this solution. The plant designed a visual scheduling and production status board system that is now prominently displayed on the shop floor. Now, everyone can see at any time exactly how things are going in the plant. The idea of visual management is one of the lean concepts we're trying to implement at our plants around the world. As a result of this project, there was a 19% improvement in service performance, and the process is currently running at 99% on time. The next example I'd like to talk about is from our abrasives manufacturing plant in Ames, Iowa. The business situation was poor service and high cost due to variable customer demand. The lean tools were really aimed at trying to smooth the plant loading. And as a result, the total backorder level in the plant was reduced by 77% and is currently running at less than $100,000 with less variability. The plant also saw a 6% improvement in the service metrics and is currently running at 98.5% on time. The final example I'd like to talk about is from our dental manufacturing plant in Irvine, California. This plant produces restorative products for crowns and fillings. In this case, the business need was to improve service due to capacity and lead time issues. As you can see from the list, there were a number of lean tools applied to this project. As a result of our lean efforts, what we're seeing is really a transformation on our shop floors. We're also seeing improved material flow through our processes as a result of better organization, visual management, and some of the other lean concepts that we're implementing. These efforts resulted in a lead time reduction from 105 days to 55 days with improved service for both our U.S. and our international customers. Lean is really helping us improve the speed of our operations around the world. In summary, our Lean Six Sigma evolution continues, building on a strong Six Sigma foundation. We have our efforts focused on the business needs, and we're transforming how we execute and energizing our workforce around the world by seeking their involvement. And finally, we're driving growth by looking at things from our customers' perspective. So, Lean Six Sigma continues to be a key tool to achieve both our growth and productivity objectives at 3M. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Hopefully that gives you a little better appreciation for a set of tools like Lean. When you bolt those on to Six Sigma, can be a very powerful concept for a kind of a manufacturing company like 3M. And we'll keep driving the productivity. And again, this will continue on into the future. And I think it'd be fair to say, John, that we've just barely scratched the surface, okay, on really implementing Lean. So there's a lot more ahead of us. The next thing I'm going to talk about is our supply chain. I think you've heard since George has been here about our supply chains. Supply chains is not just a productivity tool. It's a lot about growth, too. So in George's remarks, he'll also talk about supply chain from his perspective. But importantly, supply chain improvements give us really four big advantages. It improves service, reduces cost, takes out working capital, and also gives us a tax advantage. So let me just try to explain this in a little more detail. And also I'll get into why we have this situation in the first place here in just a second. But importantly, as we start to work on our supply chains, we think there's about $1 billion cash opportunity for us as we get some of our supply chains cleaned up. And this is really a combination of efforts. One is to untangle the very complex supply chains that we've got in many of our U.S. operations, but also it has to do with locating more of our supply chain closer to a lot of our growth markets and many of our customers. So the way we see it right now, by 2012, we see these three benefits, which do not include the tax benefits, which I will talk about later. we easily have a 1-point improvement in our growth rate. You know, that's about $100 million on a pre-tax basis. We think we've got at least $300 to $400 million of cost reduction around logistics reduction, shrinkage in our inventories, labor savings, and just overall demand planning. And then the big savings is really about a $700 million benefit we see in inventory reductions as we get closer to our customer share. So importantly, getting a supply chain gives us accelerated growth, driving productivity, and that gives us the ability to reinvest back into more growth. And I'll cover this in some more detail here. Now you kind of ask, well, how did this come about, or give me a little more insight in this. This is kind of a high-level assessment of what's going on. Right now we have, our sales are about 39% in the U.S., 61% internationally. Our assets are about 57% and 43% internationally. So a lot of things have happened. One is, as international has grown, we have not kept pace with our supply chain infrastructure and asset builds with those. And I'll cover that in some more details later. When I talk, then by 12, what's going to happen is our current forecast shows that international will be about 65% of our business, U.S. 35, and with the investment plans we have in place, with the supply chain strategy, we'll get to about 45% in the U.S. versus 55%. You'll see that they're still not exactly balanced, and the reality is we have a significant large ecosystem of manufacturing built around our optical film manufacturing today in the U.S. that we will not try to replicate outside the U.S. And we also have a few other businesses that require a large-scale manufacturing. And in those cases, it probably does not make sense to move those either. So this is a good move forward for us, and we'll continue to work on this over time. But this will be a big stretch for us. And importantly, we're also going to be looking at building assets in high-growth, low-tax jurisdictions. And I'll talk about that some more. Now, what's our recent inventory performance been? If you've listened to our earnings calls and so forth, you've realized over the last 18 months or so we've started to experience some working capital issues. So let me try to describe this. In 2001 through 2004, we had sales growth of about $3.3 billion. We actually brought inventories down by $400 million during that period of time. We took turns from 3.5 to 5.3. So what was happening? We had a very specific goal on getting turns improved, but the consequence of that, we started to see service starting to slip on us. So it was very clear at that point in time that these service levels would not allow us to keep the business growing. So we obviously had to change the strategy. We effectively had to back off on our inventory performance until we were able to actually improve our supply chains. So what's happened since 2004 to 2006, our sales growth has gone from 2.9, but our inventory change has been about $700 million, and our turns have dropped from 5.3 to 4.7. So we effectively hit a wall here. We effectively had to adjust for that, and now we've got the plans in place on the supply chain side to try to work our way back up to a more reasonable inventory level. Importantly, getting one turn back will give us about $700 million of improvement, which was on the previous slide. Now, one of the things that we've talked about as part of this supply chain strategy is we've got 19 new plants under construction, where we did have at the beginning of the year. Let me just try to give you a kind of a timeline as to where those are. This adds up to the 19 plants, and when these plants effectively will be up and running. Not necessarily full-scale capacity production at that point in time, but they will be up and producing product for customers. We'll have ultimate capacity of about $2.5 billion by the end of next calendar year for these 19 plants. Again, they all have to scale up. Importantly, right now, you can see that by the end of 2007, we'll have over half of those plants up and running. And there's nothing significant to report relative to startup issues or the like. The costs related to these startups are all manageable and immaterial relative to our overall results. So from that standpoint, everything is on track right now. Now, let's get to tax rate. Our tax rate versus a number of peers. Nothing magic about this group of peers. In some cases, they are investment peers. In other cases, they could be competitors as well. But our tax rate in 07 that we've guided to is in the 33% range. If you look at our peer group, they're about 27. And I know for some of you who follow GE, you know GE's got a much lower rate, okay, down to about 16%. I took GE off just for it kind of screws up the averages, and it doesn't. I mean, the reality is our goal, which I'm going to tell you about here in a second, is to get about 2.5 points out here over the next 5 years. So so effectively getting us, you know, not even to the peer. But I will tell you that our longer-term goal is to get about 5 points out. Now, the question is, why are we here? Why do we have a high tax rate? The reality is our manufacturing and intellectual property is predominantly in high-tax locations, the U.S., West Europe, and Japan. And all of our business operations are headquartered in the U.S. So effectively, the bulk of our value creation is driven in high-tax jurisdictions. So as part of our supply chain move, we need to start moving not only manufacturing assets, we're also going to have to start moving technical assets, in some cases also business operations, to different tax jurisdictions. Now, here's our simple overview of our strategy over the next couple of years. Getting at manufacturing assets, today we're heavily weighted in the U.S., Western Europe, and Japan. Same thing from a technical resource standpoint. In the future, we need to locate capacity in low-tax locations with common shipping locations to growth markets. So obviously, we need to balance here between where the growth is from a customer standpoint and where we put our manufacturing assets in the ground. But generally speaking, we can find low-tax locations around most of the shipping or most of the customer locations. Technical resources, we'll have to continue to build our technical capability outside the U.S. From a business unit operations, as I mentioned, we're all in the U.S. today. Yet half of our divisions have over 60% of their sales outside the U.S. So one of the things that we have to look at is, should some of our business units actually be located outside the U.S.? And as part of that, there is the possibility of actually locating some business operations in low-tax areas as well. And then we also have to move some of our internal metrics from pre-tax to after-tax inside the company. Even though we use economic profit as our payout metric, in many cases we use operating income as our primary operating tool. So the reality is we have to make that change. So our goal right now, or our target, is really to get our tax rate down by 30.5% by 2012, which is a reduction of 2.5 points. That is equivalent to about $150, $200 million of earnings. Or the other way of thinking of it is about $225 to $300 million of pre-tax results, which obviously goes a long way. Now, our goal is a point per year, but I can't commit that we got a point per year at this point in time. But our goal is to try to get 5 points over 5 years. But as far as talking to you today, what I felt more comfortable is actually giving you a 2.5 point plan. But be sure that we're working on a bigger plan. And if you saw the peer numbers, it surely shows that we can get there. Now, so talking about Lean Six Sigma, talk about supply chain. We're not done with some selective restructuring of our businesses as well as part of this move. But as I mentioned before, we don't see any really large-scale need to restructure our manufacturing operations. This is not a wholesale move out of the U.S. and Europe into other parts of the world. This is more fine-tuning what we've got. But importantly, since 2002, we've not only been building plants, but we've also been rationalizing old and acquired facilities that we've had. We have actually closed over 55 plants over the last 6 years. And we've done that quietly in most cases. The financial impact has not been material in many cases, so they really have not been disclosed. But importantly, we've been driving out facilities, and you'll see that most of these have been in developed parts of the world. So these are good moves. About half of these were facilities that we acquired as part of an acquisition. That part of the strategy effectively was to close down and consolidate manufacturing along the way. But we are actively managing excess facilities to get both productivity and inventory. And I think, John Woodworth, if I have the data right, we have about 150 manufacturing facilities, give or take. We've closed 50 or so, and we've added about 50, I guess, through acquisitions and new plants. So we're about where we started about five, six years ago. And we just have to keep that up. Now, let me turn to capital allocation. That's, of course, a big question that I always get when I visit with you on what you guys are going to do with the cash. So I tried to put together a statement here around our financial policy, which is what we always talk to you about, but I want to try to get it here on a piece of paper. First and foremost, our priority is to fund available growth. So within the EPS model that I showed you, what we want to do is to drive and fund all the capital expenditures, R&D, and marketing programs that give us organic growth. On top of that, we will then go after supplemental organic acquisitions that basically help the organic growth of the company, as well as new acquisitions, of course, that generate good growth-enhancing plans for the future. So our whole first and foremost priority is to get after funding additional growth. And again, if you go back to that financial model, the same thing. We want to do everything we possibly can to keep the growth rate accelerating. Next is our dividend. We want to maintain a competitive yield and payout ratio, and I'll show you some statistics here. Offset inflation at a minimum with a maximum payout or increase dependent upon other growth-generating ideas that we have at the time. So in other words, this is going to change over time. But at a minimum, you can count on us to basically give you inflation. We do have 49 years in a row of increases, so I think that provides somewhat of a track record. And I'll come back to that. Then on the share buyback standpoint, we'll look at this more as on an opportunistic basis. And I'll cover this again in some more detail. The economic dynamics and alternative cash uses will drive the repurchase levels. We're just not headed into a repurchase program that regardless of what the external world's like, that we're going to execute it. If the world changes, we'll modify our plan here. We're ready to support the stock when we see it's warranted. For the right growth investments, we are willing to lever up our balance sheet. We operate the company with a AA operating discipline. So as we think about cash management, how we drive the operating discipline of the company, and we decide, look at dividend repurchase programs, we're really thinking more of a AA operating discipline and a metrics. However, for the right kind of strategic cash generating deal, we definitely will be willing to lever up the company to go after that. Now, this is our capital allocation model through 2008, the way we currently see it. You can see that cash from operations is $9 to $10 billion. I'm going to cover some asset sales that we're looking at are $400 to $500 million. So we've got about $9.5 to $10 billion through the end of next year to kind of look at and how to deploy. This is our current thinking on how that will be deployed, and I'm going to cover each one of these on a chart. But CapEx is 2.8 to 3, M&A is $1 billion to $2 billion, pensions is kind of a nominal amount right now. Dividends is 2.8 based upon a historical track record, and net share repurchase is 2.5 to 3.5 billion, depending upon obviously what cash is available. But importantly, what we're trying to do is to drive the growth of the company. So let's talk about business and real estate just for a second. I think all of you are aware that we sold the branded pharmaceutical business in the fourth quarter of last year for the Asia piece in the U.S., and we did the Europe piece here in the first quarter. And Brad and his team deserve a heck of a lot of credit for working their way through that event. A very complicated transaction for anybody who's never done. Okay, a three-area deal with three different buyers all at the same time. We sold Opticon here in the second quarter. We have a number of small deals that we're currently looking at, nothing the magnitude of pharmaceuticals, though, but we'll continue to work the pipeline there. We have become more active on the real estate front, primarily around office real estate. There's actually two pieces of office real estate here. There's one which was a technical center in Korea, and this actually was a manufacturing site we had in St. Paul. But importantly, on the office side, what we've got is our facilities that kind of fit in two camps. One camp is facilities that both France and Italy fit into, that the facility is way too big for our use. We had larger operations in those countries at one point in time. So in many cases, these facilities may only be about half occupied. So what we need to do is really move into facilities that are a lot more right-sized for what our needs are. We also have facilities that have are in locations where the real estate has appreciated so much that we probably have too much invested for a office facility. So we will actually look to move to a facility that is in a more investment right-sized basis for us. But over the next 2 years or so, you will see us actually be disposing of some of our real estate. But importantly, what we're trying to do is get our operations into the right-sized facility and really state-of-the-art facilities where we can do that. Versus some of these other locations. So we are divesting some non-strategic businesses, and we are actively monetizing probably 6 to 8 to 10 real estate properties as we currently look at it. And these will be phased out over time. Now, if you look at capital, we told you in 07, the blue bars here are capital expenditures. The red is depreciation by itself. You can see that in 07, we've told you $1.4 to $1.5 billion. Our current thinking for 08, that's about the same. We'll be about the same level at this juncture of our planning process. You can see, though, that back in the late 90s, we were investing about the same level. So it's a little bit surprising when you look at depreciation that the numbers really don't change that much, at least through 08. And actually, of course, with the expansion in sales, you can see that our depreciation rate is actually going down or should stabilize here probably in 08. So we are investing in growth, and at this point in time, it's a very manageable impact on our depreciation and amortization. Now, as I turn to M&A just for a second, this is, of course, part of our growth strategy, and George is going to cover this some more, and then Jean and Brad are actually going to talk about their deals and some more specifics as how they fit within the context of their businesses. This is the same chart we showed you last year on our M&A strategy. Nothing has changed other than we've accelerated it. So the rules are the same. We've just accelerated the activity, and I think everybody here can kind of talk about the level of activity that we've got going on in the M&A front. But this is just a quick chart on statistics. In 06 and 07, we've done 32 deals. We've paid about $1.1 billion. Price to sales about 1.4, or price to EBITDA is about 8.4. We've acquired about 3 points of growth. But if you look at it now by business, you'll see that we've always told you safety, security, and healthcare were going to be probably our largest focus areas on the M&A front. You can see that in safety security, we had 7 deals, and their growth, they've acquired about 7.5% growth. Healthcare is about 3%, but about 10 deals. But actually, a pleasant surprise is in H.C. Shin's business in industrial, we found a number of nice industrial companies to buy. You can see 7 deals here, and he's acquired about 3.6% growth. Everyone else is involved in the game, just not to the same degree. But this has actually been a very good upside from a growth standpoint for many of our businesses. And I think you'll see the excitement that Brad and John have around some of their activity. This is just a pictorial of some of the deals that we've had. I'm not going to go into this in any detail. One other thing, obviously, when you look at balance sheet management is, where do we stand on pension post-employment liabilities? And you can see over time that our funding status has improved from 75 to 99% we currently estimate by the end of the year. So, in other words, take this away as a non-issue for us as a company. We've made good progress. We've continued to fund our liabilities. We also have a very active program on looking at, obviously, the cost side of this and managing the liability side of this. So it's not just about throwing cash at the problem. So we're managing both sides of that equation. Dividends. We obviously get a lot of questions about, depending upon what audience we're with, why don't you guys increase your dividends more? And obviously I got the other side of the room saying, no, I don't want you to do that. So it's always an interesting conversation we have. But Importantly, when we look at dividend trends and where we're at competitively, the way you read this chart is this is our yield, this is our payout ratio against companies. This is really the S&P makeup that are. This shows revenue growth. If it's under 5% revenue growth versus between 5 and 10, 10, 15, and greater than 15. And then this is just the table of those companies. And one thing that's important is, of course, the percent on here only reflects those companies that are paying dividends. You also have companies that don't pay dividends at all. So when you look at this, you know, we're kind of in this 5 to 10% top line growth company. We're at about 2.3. The mean of the whole S&P is about 2.1. And we're about, 1.9 for the companies in that group. So, and as obviously as we try to move to higher growth, we think we're very competitive from both a yield perspective as well as a payout ratio, which is what you see over on this side. So we will continue to, monitor our performance against the market as a whole, against a selective group of investment peers and the like. But we think we're in a very competitive position right now. On share repurchase, what I thought I would do is try to go back and talk about where we were when we launched our repurchase program earlier this year, and kind of make sure we have the foundation for that. We announced a $7 billion buyback program over 2 years. The environment back then, of course, borrowing costs, rates were very low, spreads were very tight, and a very stable market condition. Credit availability, all kinds of liquidity, of course, as we knew. The economic environment was relatively stable. And at that point in time, we probably were trading about a 7% premium to the market from a stock price standpoint. Today, we're obviously, the credit markets have changed. Borrowing costs have changed. Credit availability is a lot tighter. Economic environment, let's face it, there's just some noise out there that we have to keep, managing our way through. And obviously, our stock price has responded reasonably well. So near term, the economics of a buyback program are less compelling than when we launched the program. So we will be slowing our program down, and more than likely, we will have to extend the duration of our repurchase activity. Now, all shareholders should love this chart. If you don't, I guess I'd like to talk to you about what's not on this chart is effectively the TSR. The TSR for our company since the tail end of 2001 has been about 11% CAGR. Okay, good performance by almost any measure. You can always find companies who've been better than that, but our model has been to continue to drive double-digit earnings growth with a dividend, good dividend yield to give you that level of TSR. But if you look at what we've given back shareholders in repurchase activity and dividends, you can see that since really 2001, including 2001, we've 11.7 to repurchase, 7.4 of dividends paid out, dividend CAGR of 8%, and so we return we've returned 109% of reported net income during this period. And again, the TSR has also shown it, okay, on the stock price side of it. So, all in all, a very good result. So with that, I'm going to summarize. I've spent the time talking about, how our journey has kind of changed, kind of driven the productivity side, capital allocation side of the business. So what I really want to do now is hand it over to George, who's going to talk about the growth side of this and how we're going to stimulate growth. I'm not going to cover these, but I think it's fair to say that the growth agenda of the company has been altered significantly since George joined us, okay? So his presentation is going to be very, very critical. So with that, I'll turn it over to George.